Digging in the dirt. Digging in the dirt.
This is Digging in the Dirt with Kevin Gallagher, where Kevin and his guests dig a little deeper into today's issues surrounding the environment, farming, gardening, and food.
Well, my guest today on Digging in the Dirt is Matt Hill, founder and chief environmental evangelist of One Tree Planted. It's a nonprofit organization focusing on global reforestation, and they work with reforestation organizations around the world that need financial support to get them more trees in the ground. $1, one tree, and hopefully by the millions. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks, Kevin.
Where are you right now? I know you're a globetrotter, so you just flew in somewhere. Where are you?
Yeah, so the Amazon rainforest in Peru. So I literally just off the plane 15 minutes ago and in a bus headed to our eco lodge.
Very good. And what's the goal for this trip? What are you going to be up to?
You know, we're planting trees in the Amazon rainforest here. So usually when we go into a new project, we have to take a look at the nursery and take a look at the project to just kind of see what they're doing, what type of impact.
Okay.
So that's what we're doing right now. So we just met with the executive director in Lima earlier this morning, and then we jumped on a plane and headed 2 hours south to the deep Amazon forest. And then we get picked up in about 30 minutes to go to the head office here in Maldonado.
Okay.
So I wish I could text you some pictures because I just got here.
Oh, yeah. It would be nice if we could see what we're talking about. So I got to ask you right off the bat, what is an environmental evangelist, your title?
You know what? I'm a marketing guy, and I'm like, you know, CEO and all those type of titles. They're just so boring. So what we try and do is just be outside the box as much as we can. So I just want to tell people about the importance of trees. Because people don't realize it, how important trees are. You know, you kind of take them for granted. And I tell people, and they're like, oh, my God, I never knew that. So that was a funny title. And then we have branch manager and chief tree planting officer.
Ecosystems manager.
Yeah, exactly.
Canopy director.
Try and keep it light. Yeah, canopy director. Just try and keep it light. Light and fun.
That's good.
My big thing, everybody kind of is doom and gloom. And if you don't give us a dollar tomorrow, the earth's going to end. And I'm just kind of making it more inspirational. And you can make a difference, you know, tree by tree.
So tell me, how did One Tree Planted get started? What started all this off?
So I used to be in sustainable food packaging. I mean, before that, way back when, I was always interested in the environment. When I did my MBA, I was going to do it in environmental policy. We're talking 20 years ago. So my cousin told me there's no jobs in the environmental space. So I was ahead of the time. So then I got into sustainable food packaging, and I ran Canada for Eco Products. So a lot of those fiber-based material food trays instead of a styrofoam, you know, meat tray, which are terrible for the environment. You know, we had, you know, stuff that was made from corn, renewable materials. And every time I was talking to these big, large, you know, grocery chains or whoever it was, they'd always say, it's too expensive. You know, so you're talking about a 4 cent coffee cup. And if it was compostable, it was 6 cents, it was 2 cents more. And they're like, no, it's too expensive. I'm like, it's 2 cents more. And they would always tell me, we wish we could do more. So my back pocket, I always say, you can plant trees. And I'm talking to big, you know, Fortune 500 companies because trees, you know, clean the air, they provide water, they help with biodiversity, they create jobs, create health, sequesters carbon. And there was a really large grocery chain like Safeway said, we love it and you should start that tree planting organization. We'll be your first customers.
And they were?
So, and they asked me, they said, you should start an organization. It sounds great. And not that there's not already a lot of great tree planting organizations out there, but I just created One Tree Planted in Vermont and said, let me prove the business model and see if it could work. You know, just make it simple for, you know, whether it's businesses or individuals that wish they could do more. And you kind of scour the internet and you look, and there's so many, you know, sites out there. And the two things that I said was, they're crazy old websites. Like this organization here in Peru, like if you go to their website to look and you wanted to help the Amazon rainforest, one, it's way too technical and too much information, so the average person doesn't want to digest information. And then the other one is the sites are like crazy old, like, you know, like, so we just try and make our site super simple, easy to understand, and say, like, you know, we plant in four regions, and if somebody zeroes in South America and they see, oh, Peru or Brazil, and then they read about the story, then they can give there. So sorry to be long-winded, but
No, you're not.
That's how I got into it.
No, that's perfect. Okay. Does your group help physically to plant the trees, or are you a facilitator getting trees planted for groups or getting them money to plant trees?
Yeah, more facilitator. The Rotary Club or school or an office will say, hey, you know, we want to help the environment. We're looking around and we found your organization and we're going to do a fundraiser all this week. You know, they raise, you know, $1,500 and then they'll give it to us and then we'll put it to a project, you know, that's in need. So most of the time they'll ask me, like, well, what projects do you have right now that we can help out with? And I'm like, let's just say, for example, you know, they're going to plant the faith. And I said, well, you missed the whole season. Like, you know, the faith is, you know, turning back on in, you know, February, March, April, when most of it happens. So we're more the facilitator, but we organize a lot of tree planting events, you know, whether it's in Oregon or Miami or New York, where we try and encourage people to go out and plant trees. So we do a lot of that. And then that's really the eye-opener to them saying, because, you know, a forester will be there or an arborist and explain to them, hey, here we're at a watershed and it's helping with, you know, the steelhead trout because the water's getting too warm because it lost all its shade. So the steelhead trout's not coming back here to spawn anymore. And then you see this massive ripple effect, you know, that spins off into the ecosystem. When they're out there, so they think, oh my God, yeah, I didn't really realize that. So a bit of both, but really the core part is, you know, we'll accumulate the funds from donations that are $1 or $10, and we have a bucket of money now, and then we'll reach out to whether it's state forestry or a local watershed and saying, hey, we have, you know, $20,000, can we help you? And so that's the way it works.
Sure. So what about corporate donors? I mean, do you have some corporate responsibility going here, offsetting their carbon footprint?
We do get requests from that, but I kind of say there's a lot of carbon offset companies out there. I steer them that way, so that's not really our core business model, the carbon offset. You know, I just say trees have so many important factors to it, like restoring habitat to, you know, local biodiversity or creating jobs, bringing down the shade to get kids to go up in a play, in a park, you know, cleaning the air, cleaning the water. So that's what more of my business model focus on. But, it, you know, I do know projects that, you know, provide the carbon credit.
Okay. So you on your website, yeah, you explain that there's six pillars of why trees are so vital. So they're the air, water, biodiversity, social impact, health, and climate. So let's run through a couple of these. Air and water, what does the tree do or trees do, and how many do we need to be effective?
Well, so the trees will, you know, create oxygen. They'll also clean the air in terms of pulling out impurities from the air. So just like you breathe easier. And, you know, a lot of times when there's storms and runoff, and people don't realize how much access to clean drinking water, you know, major cities get. And in New York, I can't remember, but they're talking about doing a huge water treatment. It was going to cost billions, but what they did, the state of New York, was they just bought a lot of land. So when it rains, you know, the water's going through the soil, the trees are, like, filtering a lot of the water, and then, you know, it's providing great opportunities for access to clean drinking water. So there's that part. If you ask me any others between the air and the water. And then even, you know, when I go into water, like, you know, you can see a lot of, like, landslides, you know, maybe happening in California when there's a massive rain. So not only to the access to clean drinking water and clearing the impurities, it's also holding the soil together and keeping it more reinforced. So it's stopping massive landslides, which I kind of still put in for the water part.
Mm-hmm.
And then it releases it over time. And in terms of the health, we did a project in Miami where they were creating a canopy, and it just brings down the shade by about 10, 15 degrees. So the kids will be outside, you know, more often versus staying inside playing video games just because of the shade. So, you know, a lot of health opportunities. And on the other one, especially the Amazon rainforest where I am right now, one out of four medicines that we take are derived from plants and trees, the clear cuts and stuff. And I would say to be losing the next wonder cure because of the amount of trees that are becoming extinct that we're cutting down. And aspirin was derived from the willow tree way back in the day. It's a lot of, you know, native medicines, you know, are coming from trees.
Yeah, you said on your site that 25% of medicines come from trees.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you did your research.
Oh,
you're
yeah,
looking on that website.
Yeah, well, you know, we got to have an intelligent conversation, let people know what's going on, you know. Biodiversity. How does it improve biodiversity by planting trees?
Sure. So I was at the Climate Summit in San Francisco in September, I believe it was September, and they were talking about the massive forest fires, and they were talking about damage and loss. But you never see it in the news in terms of how many deer were lost and how many raccoons and squirrels. And even if they weren't lost in the forest fires, how much were displaced. So this was their habitat in this entire area, like the spotted owl. You know, I was doing a tour, and you know, this is where a lot of them lived. And now all of a sudden, massive forest fire. So they're either relocated or they're lost in the fires. So I find that that's often neglected. And I was watching the news the other day, too, and they're talking about in Paradise that there was double the amount of, like, whether it was pigs and horses and dogs that were just now astray, and they were trying to figure out what are we going to do with all these animals. So it's definitely something that's overlooked when you look at whether it's a forest fire for the loss of trees or just, you know, cutting down of the trees, you know, for, like, more beef production or soy or whatever it might be.
And what do you mean by social impact? What is the social impact of planting trees?
Sure. So in the United States, Canada, so many jobs that, you know, are dependent on the forestry industry. And when we're putting back more trees, it's creating jobs. But, you know, here in Peru, and I just use this example because I'm here right now, there's massive amounts of jobs. So, you know, we're trying to stop people from doing mining and show them that by planting trees and doing agroforestry. So you're putting up trees that are providing, you know, cocoa for chocolate or nuts or berry type of trees. And then they can, you know, harvest the nuts, the fruits from these trees, and now you have a sustainable model versus you just put up a tree that is not bearing any types of fruits or nuts, and then they cut it down for timber purposes, let's just say. So, you know, a lot of the stuff that's happening now in Africa and South America is teaching more sustainable practices so that they can have a continued income stream. And it's also keeping people out of extreme poverty and bringing them to low income.
Very cool.
So, you know, it's so cool. So agroforestry is a big area that we look at, and we're doing that here in this Peru project. So it was a lot of degraded land that had been, you know, devastated from the practices that were going on. So we're doing agroforestry here. So it's a double whammy. You know, you're creating jobs, and they're doing trees that are providing an income, and it's also replenishing the soil, which then brings back the entire ecosystem.
Cool. So we're talking to Matt Hill. He's the chief environmental evangelist, founder of One Tree Planted, which is doing some pretty cool stuff out there with tree planting. Before we get to the final pillar of the six pillars, since we're talking about these trees, tell us a little bit about how trees are selected for areas. I understand it's got to be the right trees for the right areas and for the right reasons. So explain a bit about that.
Sure. A lot of people always ask me, are you doing native tree species, you know, because it's just a common, you know, part. And obviously that is the major focus. But I would say I'm not the tree expert. Like, you know, I really say, you know, everybody can, I look in the middle of the ground. I'm not looking at the disbeliever, and I'm not looking at that extremist tree hugger, you know, that fanatic person. I'm looking at, you know, the middle of the ground person that wishes they could do more, they have a family, they take two trips per year, you know, and they want to plant a tree. So they say you're planting native tree species. But I think I mentioned before that, like in Florida, when we were doing some site assessments and doing some trips after the hurricane, they were looking at, okay, what trees withstood this hurricane and which ones went down? And a lot of times maybe those trees that were going down were the more common native trees that were there. So they're doing the ones that are more resilient to the hurricanes because they're happening more and more. And in California or in Colorado, we do a lot of tree planting. You know, and in British Columbia, they were doing this thing called pioneer tree species. I'm like, what's pioneer tree species? And there was like six tree experts. You had the state forestry, and you had nursery people there, and they're all kind of discussing, and they're almost even arguing about what they're going to plant in the ground because they're trying to look at, well, what's going to happen if we put these in here, and is this going to provide more barrier and keep more moisture in the ground so that there'll be less forest fires? Pine beetle epidemic, you know, is massive, destroying, you know, it's so sad, but so many amounts of trees that those overlook. So they're putting, you know, not pine trees and aspen or cottonwood, pine beetles from moving forward. So I always tell people, I'm not the tree experts. I'll rely on who, you know, Cal Fire when they're planting with the RCDs, and I provide the money, and they're telling me what they're doing. But they know best because they've been working that particular area of Northern California for 20, 30 years. When I deal with Colorado State Nursery, and they're going into an area, you know, they know these are going to be aspen. And it's always a combination of trees, you know. It's not like, oh, we're just putting Douglas firs and that's it, that's all. They're putting shrubs. They're putting in the combinations of trees. And when you do that, you're actually having a holistic effect that you're getting a better tree survival rate, you know. And some of these trees grow faster than others. and they actually are working together so that they all survive together. And there was a book, Secret Life of Trees, I believe, where it really goes into details about, you know, this whole ecosystem of trees. Really interesting. I haven't finished it yet, but anyway, answer your question. It's a variety, and there's a lot of new things happening over the last 5 years, because we see every year, you know, it's drier and drier, and more forest fires, and more hurricanes, so we're trying new things.
Right. I guess agroforestry also provides an income where that means people want to take care of what they're growing.
Yeah. So they're making a commitment to the local farmers, and that's like this project here. They work with the local community, and in every project, you got to work with the local community. You can't just be an NGO. We're going into Peru, and we're going to buy 20 acres of land and, you know, put up our type of trees. Either the project gets sabotaged or there's resistance to, you know, call it the accommodating. So you have to incorporate the local community just as an overall better effect, and it's a win-win.
So you must be a little disheartened by what's going on in Brazil with a new leader down there stating that, you know, they're going to exploit the Amazon in their country.
Yeah, it's so unfortunate with what's going on in politics and about, you know, dollars and cents versus that. So long-term consequences, it's unfortunate. You know, I just look at, I always do things one day fit. You know, I go to this project and, you know, I have this great sense of satisfaction what we're accomplishing here. And, you know, if I can get great photos, great video, and tell the story of what's going on here, show that to people, and people can be aware, I think it's a snowball effect. You know, we just continue to grow. And then I think, you know, hopefully these type of things will change in the future when people start realizing what's going on. And I know I don't want to dissuade you from thinking, you know, climate or carbon credit, you know, it's not there. I'll just throw it out there probably even before you ask me for the lack of time. You know, carbon and sequestering it and pulling carbon from the atmosphere. I just take an average. So I always tell a company who says, hey, we're going to give you X amount of money. How much carbon is that? The average is 48 pounds per tree, a mature tree. So how long does a tree take to hit maturity? You know, call it 7 years, whatever it might be. But I always say, you know, what type of tree are we planting here in Peru, and what's the elevation and what's surrounding it versus a tree that could be in, you know, Malibu versus Miami. So every tree is different. You know, oak trees are really good. You know, the mighty oak is probably the best tree in terms of sequestering carbon. So, but, you know, if you just take an average and say, okay, I planted 1,000 trees, here's what the 48 pounds times 1,000 would be X, you know, and then you could do the math. So I just keep it simple.
Very good. Yeah, my wife and I bought a property about 10 years ago, and we've been averaging about 30 trees a year, so we're pretty happy about, you know, mostly pine trees, because that's what the deer don't eat.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, going on that thing where the deer don't eat, you know, it was a project in Oregon, and we did 70,000 trees, and then she was saying to me, I said, what's the tree survival? Because that's one of the big questions we always ask, what's your tree survival? You know, there's organizations out there doing it, you know, super cheap, and I don't know how you do it, but, you know, you're sprinkling seeds on the ground, and maybe you have a 5% tree survival. We're always trying to shoot for an 80% tree survival rate. But I've done projects where the next week it snowed a foot in Colorado, and, you know, this particular terrain in Oregon was a lot of deer. And she said, within 2 weeks, 50% of the trees would be eaten by the deer. So when people donate and give us a dollar and we give them X amount to plant those trees, now they can use that surplus money to put the little mesh wire around each tree, or what we were looking at that one was living fences, because now we freed up a bit of their budget so they can optimize their tree survival rate.
Yeah, I mean, the deer eat just about everything, but they tend not to eat blue spruce and things like that. I have found out from experimentation, because they wipe me out and a couple of other things.
Oh, yeah? Plant.
Yeah. So
okay, and you know, on that note, when we did the project last May in British Columbia, they were actually planting the trees where there was a fallen tree. And I was like, why are you doing that? And they say, because when the cows and the deer come, they don't like the obstacles, so they'll actually go around and they'll avoid eating that one. And the tree planters are going and planting them. Yeah, so it's interesting. I learn something every time I go to a site, which is super cool. And then it also provides a bit of shade, which is true. And sometimes some of these trees will have a bit of moisture in there, so it helps. But a lot of it, the biggest one was to stop the deer and the cows from accessing that.
So you're really meticulous about following through from planting to making sure it gets a survival rate. I mean, how is that done? You have crews that go out and do that, or, you know, like yourself, you're going down there now to watch a project at its inception. What about as it gets older and older?
Well, lot of these partners that we go with, like, you know, have been doing this, you know, for 30, 40 years. So we don't really typically go with, like, a startup and says, oh, you know, Bob's your uncle and I'm planting in Bolivia to, you know, put 10,000 trees, give me some money.
I see.
We're going with established organizations that have been vetted. And the guy today, when we're the executive director, they've had ups and downs, and I've heard that all the time. They try a project, 10,000 trees here, didn't work. Why didn't it work? And, you know, they're always optimizing, making sure. But, you know, historically, you know, they have a 70-80% tree survival rate. You never know with Mother Nature. You know, we've done projects like in Minnesota State Forestry when we were supposed to plant and go check out the site. They delayed it by 2 weeks because there was just no rain because they plant in the spring. And they're like, we can't plant because soil conditions aren't optimal. So then I traveled, you know, I can't remember where I went. And then they called me and they're like, okay, come now, and, you know, get your pictures. I'm like, I can't. So, you know, these windows open up. These guys are the experts to know when to plant it. And then, like I was saying, whether it's snow or something else can affect it.
Sure.
They just have historical numbers.
You're listening to Matt Hill. He's chief environmental evangelist for One Tree Planted. He's down in Peru, so a little bit scratchy connection. But nonetheless, we're getting some good information from him about trees. And one thing I'm interested in is, what do you think is a difference maker? Is planting these trees in the millions really going to help mitigate climate change? And how many of them do we have to plant to start helping with reversing some of these trends that we're getting these oddball, you know, really scary reports from the government now? So people are buying in,
right.
But what, you know, is it going to make a difference changing our agriculture practices and planting trees? Is that going to be the bulk of it, or do we have to have a combination of things?
Well, look, when that IPCC report came out and the CEO of Shell said the best thing we can do right now, forget all that technology, I mean, definitely it's going the right direction, is to plant trees. You know, I mean, he probably knows his stuff because they're probably knocked all the time. But, you know, at the end of the day, what I say is planting, if you don't plant the tree, you know, nothing's happening, but at least it's planted a tree, you're going at least the right direction. So whether it's one tree or it's a million trees or 100 million trees, it's helping. And if it's helping with climate, and maybe it's only a marginal difference, it's still happening in so many other ways, whether it's creating jobs or it's helping with the soil or it's helping with the biodiversity. You know, I remember I got some money from a person who's a skeptic on the whole climate change and said it's a cyclical thing. But he did give me the money because he goes, I know it is helping with biodiversity, and I know a tree in the ground is better than not a tree in the ground. But he wasn't giving it because he was thinking it was helping with climate in any way.
Huh.
So, yeah. And then, you know, I'll get, you know, more girls that were like, are going because they're like, because it's helping with biodiversity. So I always find somebody will lean towards one of the six pillars that they have a connection to. A lot of times I'll speak to a company and they're set on, you know, they're domestic, and let's just call it, you know, the United States. But then I tell them, well, here's a project and its social impact. And once they hear about the story, they're like, oh my God, that's amazing. Yeah, put the money over there, because, you know, they're just unaware of, you know, this impact that the trees can have. So usually they come in originally based on a geography set, but then sometimes it opens up their eyes and they'll shift it.
Sure.
But I probably say the two things where I see it the most, because I have so many conversations every day with people are just learning and people who are very knowledgeable, is let's just take the average person, North American, wants to give, you know, what are the two things that top of mind if they are thinking about planting tree, be domestic, I want to help what's going on here domestically, or the Amazon rainforest, you know, something I've heard of, you know. But then when they're on the website and they start like looking around and they're looking at projects in Africa, and there's a project in Rwanda or Kenya, or I take a country in South America, and you talk about all the different countries that are within the Amazon rainforest. Most people are just thinking it's just all within Brazil, the big majority, but there's other countries involved in the Amazon rainforest. So, you know, at the end, I think what we're doing, and you ask the question, is it going to help? I think it's going to help. And you have to do something, and then it starts, and you create a movement, let's just say. But it's opening up eyes. You know, I got the CEO of L'Oreal. He was planting trees, getting his hands in the dirt, and crazy hard worker. And when the people were talking about the importance, he was like, oh, my God, I never knew all this. And, you know, obviously this is a very knowledgeable guy, knows his stuff. And he's like, we need to send a memo to all the employees at L'Oreal to tell them more. And then, you know, a few months later, they created the Sustainability Week. And then they raised a lot of money internally to go and help plant trees. So, you know, if you're doing these small little things, it makes a change.
Yep, I think that that's the key thing. It's going to take all of us. We're all in this together, and we have to convince, I believe, a lot of corporate partners to change their ways and also help us. I mean, without them, it's going to be a daunting task. So I'm all for that kind of stuff.
I want to hear an interesting note on that, Kevin.
Sure.
Just throw it in there.
Absolutely.
I think it's about $400 billion is given every year in the United States, and only 3% of that $400 billion goes to environmental causes, and I was with 1% for the planet, and they were saying of that 3% that goes just to the environment, only 3% comes from business. That means 97% of all the environmental giving comes from individuals like us. So I definitely think businesses need to step to the plate.
I think, and we should start pressuring them to do so, you know, whether it's through boycott or just sending them an email. I mean, I've done that, and I've noticed that, not so necessarily to say that my own personal effort to hip a company to my displeasure changed them, but I think I was not the only one, and then their behavior changed, and now you go into something like Costco, you see organic stuff, you see things that are more environmentally friendly, and I think if we all did it en masse, they would change pretty quick.
100%.
So before I let you go, tell me about, you know, we're sitting here a little overwhelmed by the human cost of that California campfires. I mean, our hearts go out to all those who lost homes and loved ones. And it's got to be one of the worst American forest fire tragedies ever. And after the missing are found and laid to rest and they start rebuilding, what's the process for restoring the environment in the place out there near paradise?
Sure. So, you know, last year when I was dealing with forest fires with Cal Fire and the RCDs is, you know, they're going to go back to a forest fire. So the first thing is, you know, get the livelihood back together. So restoring homes, restoring infrastructure, roads, you know, necessities, right? And then there was a second tier, and off the top of my head, I don't remember what tier two was. But then the third is looking at, you know, call it the ecosystem or call it the trees that were lost. So, you know, it's going to be like 2 years out, maybe 3 years out, that they're going to go and do a site assessment and look at, you know, how many trees were lost, what do we need to do, is Mother Nature taking its course, and then they'll do an inventory and figure out, okay, we need to, you know, grow X amount of trees to bring this back. So, I mean, a lot of people think that you just go right back out and plant the trees, and they have to let the land kind of, you know, Mother Nature take its course to kind of be ready to take back some trees. So that's typical of the time frame, because people just know, how often is it, you know, how long do you wait before you go and you put back a tree? So I kind of say 2 to 3 years. And then you'll go and you do a site assessment, and then you have to clear the land. So that's a lot of these organizations. What they're missing is a piece to clear all the dead trees out, so that when the tree planters come, you plant, they have a clear path to just plant. Because if there's obstacles, this and that, it's hazardous to them. So it goes in phases, and then they have to order the trees, and then tree planters go. And this is an interesting note. I think you'll like this one. The average tree planter, like a professional tree planter, plants about 3,000 trees in a day. They're paid on production.
Well, that's impressive.
Depending on the type of tree. Yeah, and then there's a term called highballer. I went to a tree planting wedding. I got invited to a wedding. There's all tree planters, about 300 of them. And they go, he's a highballer. I'm like, what does that mean? And they're like, that's the guy who, like, consistently plants the most trees every day. And he'll do like 5,000 trees.
Wow.
So I'm like, okay, good to know. So highballer.
God bless
him. They'll go into a site. Yeah. And then, but California's broken up with what you're mentioning into resource conservation districts. So they're the ones that, like, United States Forestry Service, and then typically most states have state forestry. But these RCDs and watersheds, you know, they're the ones that really go overlooked in terms of receiving funding. So a lot of the money that we receive on our website, you know, we'll give to watersheds. And they're almost in tiers if I give them, you know, $2,000 check to buy like 2,000 trees. And, you know, they're one or three man people that are running their watershed, always, you know, trying to find funding. And they don't do the best job at telling their story, and people aren't aware of them. So the RCDs are broken up, and, you know, my team just came back from San Diego last week because there was the annual conference, and they were talking about the massive forest fires up in Paradise or years ago, and, you know, what they're doing. They're planning for 2020, 2021 projects, and, you know, one of the RCDs says, we're planning for Yosemite Park, and we need 400,000 trees planted, you know, so can you help us out? So we get project requests from, like, you know, different organizations scattered throughout California, you know, Southern California all the way up to Northern. And we hear their story, and is it a community type of tree planting project? Is it professional tree planting contractor crews that will go out and restore it? But, like, all hands are on deck. And, like, when we call an RCD or Cal Fire and saying, hey, we've got money, we want to help now, you know, they're not thinking about the tree planting right now for what's happening. They're all trying to get all these people food and shelter and get everything kind of back in line, and then they're going to kind of assess what can they do for that. But definitely a lot of need. And, you know, there's that, even before this massive one in Paradise, you know, it was 127 million, 129 million trees from drought and forest fires over the last 3 years. So when you take this now that it's the biggest, you know, probably call it 200 million trees that need to be put back in the ground in California. Wow. But you brought up a good point. You know, it's so dry, you know, and you're going to put it in here, what's the tree survival? And, you know, there's a lot of bureaucratic things that come into play, because I was talking to a watershed, just Trigger Pine Foundation. She does an amazing job. Wish there was more of her around. And, like, you know, she's having a hard time finding spots to put trees in the ground. Like, she can get the trees from us, and she can get the community to kind of get together and go, but trying to deal with, like, you know, getting the trees in the ground, you know, permissions and stuff like that. So, you know, you got a lot of balls in the air that you're trying to juggle, right, to make sure that these things are working.
So I got two questions for you. But first, everybody, this is Matt Hill of One Tree Planted. You can go to his site, onetreeplanted.org. You can find out more there. You can get involved. You can have your organization get involved. There's lots of things you can do in this area. And I think it's one of the best ways to help the environment and do something. If you really want to do something meaningful, this is one of those ways. And I think even our radio station may be coordinating with One Tree Planted to do something also in this area. So please check out onetreeplanted.org. Are you optimistic? Is humanity going to get it together and finally buy in and start doing things to work with Mother Nature to live on this planet? You have some optimism
100%.
About that?
No, 100%. I see the momentum and just building and building. You know, I mean, we're only 4 years old, and the phone's just ringing and ringing. And we get people, I say, you know, become a tree ambassador. I get people from, whether it's Connecticut or Australia, New Zealand, like all over, saying, how can I get involved? I want to help. And you're seeing people want to just, so we're just trying to, you know, simple tips. Here's how you can organize a tree planting event. People don't even know where to start. Like, how do I get my trees? Where do I put them? You know, can I just go into, you know, national park and just plant some trees? You know, so we're just trying to be a bit of a guide. But, oh, yeah, I see a lot of hope. I see a lot of people looking at it. I saw a survey by PayPal, and they have, I think they're in 18 countries, and they were saying that they did a survey in terms of what their employees wanted to do. And across the board, in all 18 countries, it was helping with sustainability initiatives, so whether it was cleaning up trash or helping plant trees or whatever, using less paper. So I see the momentum happening, definitely. I see a lot of hope.
Great. Well, you keep up the good work, Matt Hill, Chief Environmental Evangelist for One Tree Planted. Thanks for joining me here on Digging in the Dirt.
Thanks a lot, Kevin. I really appreciate it.
Take care.
Have a great day.
Yep.
Okay,
digging
bye.
In the dirt. Digging in the dirt.
You've been listening to Digging in the Dirt with Kevin Gallagher.